The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Welcome to this week's Soap Opera Digest. I'm Virginia Voice volunteer Pete Peek, reading today from the February 10th, 2025 issue of Soap Opera Digest to keep you up to date on all of your favorite characters and soap opera news. Today's first article, General Hospital Spoilers, Get Your Hands Off My Son, by Diane Brunstein. Another public scene. The action in this General Hospital Spoilers preview for the week of February the 10th has Cody and Sasha joining Felicia for the bite to eat when Jason arrives on the scene. Not a surprise, Cody loses it in the presence of the man he believes knocked up his cousin, whom he still harbors deep feelings for, and stands up to confront him. "Come on, slimeball, say it. Sasha's baby's yours," he says as others gasp. Sasha has her own reaction. She tosses her drink in Cody's face, and Nina, who is dining nearby, witnesses it and is obviously shocked. Trouble brewing. I think I did something I shouldn't have, we hear Rocco tell someone as we see Jason enter Charlie's pub looking angry. Inside, Christina is on alert to trouble. Isaiah also turns toward the door, and Lucky is tending bar while both Martin and Liz are seated at the bar. Everyone turns when Jason enters. Jason yells fiercely, "Get your hands off my son, who has made this deadly move." A long-awaited confession? The action then switches back to the restaurant where Nina is having a meal with her daughter. She tells her, "I can't understand why you would fall for Drew," she says, earning a confused yet defensive look from Willow before she continues. "Because, Willow, I," and it cuts off there, leaving us all to wonder if Nina will finally confess that she has had an affair with the congressman while Willow was pining for him. Nina has made ample opportunities to clue her daughter in and therefore hopefully turn her off to being with him. Curtis and Ava, should she tell her? Is this really finally going to happen? Let us know what you think in the comments section. In our next story, a tune-in alert. The Young and Restless Spoilers, Tell Me How to Win a Fight with Victor Newman, by Diane Brunstein. All in the Family. The action in this Young and Restless Spoilers preview for the week of February the 10th begins at the Abbott Mansion. "We're having a family night," announces Harrison, as his mom enters and takes off her coat. "Yes, we are," says a thrilled Summer, "just like Halloween. Maybe you and Mom will even hug again," Harrison exclaims excitedly to his dad as Kyle and Summer look at each other. Cue the awkwardness. To tell the truth, next up, Damien finally reunites with his mother at Nate's penthouse condo, but it's obvious the man is overwhelmed by what he finally learns. It appears that Amy has laid it all out for him, and he's finding it hard to swallow. "So you're sick, and this guy comes to you with this big lie to take advantage of you?" asks Damien, clearly not understanding what has been going on. Amy tries to regain some control of the situation when she admits to her son, "I'm the one who found Nate." Looking to defuse the situation, Nate speaks up. "I was just as suspicious as you are, bro," he tells Damien, who reacts poorly. Don't call me that," warns an unhappy Damien. "Mother, may I?" As society, Victoria hates to see her daughter struggling, especially knowing it's her own father who is causing her issues. "Is there anything I can do to help?" Victoria asks Claire. "There is. You can tell me how to win a fight with Victor Newman," ask her determined daughter. Victoria looks at her, stunned, obviously not pleased with the way this situation has turned, and see it all for yourself in the previews. Let us know what you think in the comments section. In our next story today, another tune-in alert, The Days of Our Lives Spoilers, Valentine's Day Kisses and Shocks, by Diane Brunstein. Happy Valentine's Day. In the promo video for the week of February the 10th on Days of Our Lives, Spoilers video opens up with a shirtless Johnny bringing breakfast in bed to his wife, complete with flowers and coffee. "Happy Valentine's Day, my love," he says, as Chanel smiles and pulls his arms to join her under the covers. Next, we see Steve give Kayla flowers and a kiss with "Happy Valentine's Day" and "Happy Anniversary" banners hanging up in their home. Also, Doug the Third hands flowers to a smiling Julie, as the voiceover then says, "You never know where you might find a Valentine." A huge shock. What happens next? EJ opens a door at Aramid and finds Ava. Soon, the woman in white joins them, and she smiles when she sees Stefano's son. Back with DeMiro Mansion, Kristen is enjoying a drink and tells EJ he looks like he's seen a ghost. Without missing a beat, EJ says, "I met your mother." Kristen looks at him in shock. Young love, Holly prepares to see Tate, who enters the Chrysakis home carrying a heart-shaped box of chocolate, as the voiceover says, "And it's never too late to make plans." The action switches to the Brady pub, and Tate says, "Whatever you want to do." Holly responds, "I think you know what I want to do," as the next image shows them kissing and then Holly trying on sexy negligees and a robe in front of a mirror. We hear Maggie ask in a matter-of-fact tone, "Are you two planning to have sex tonight?" Holly nearly chokes on her chocolate. Maybe, baby. Johnny and Chanel are in Horton Town Square. "I still want to have a baby," she tells her husband, as Johnny can't stop smiling. "Let's have a baby," he tells her. Chanel smiles too and responds, "Let's have a baby." See it for yourself in the promo video next. Let us think what you think in the comments section. In our next story today, the tune-in alert, bold and beautiful spoilers. "I'm having a hard time here," by Diane Brunstein. Too big an ask? The action in this bold and beautiful spoilers preview for the week of February the 10th begins with the CEO office at Forrester Creations as Carter holds Hope in his arms near the desk. "I'm having a hard time here," he confides. Her mother's words about how he betrayed his best friend Ridge still ringing in his ears. "If we apologize," he tells her. Shocked, Hope looks at him aghast and says, "You want me to apologize to Ridge and Steffi? Will this request be something that comes between them? They've been so close up until now." Is the truth out? Back at the hospital, Finn is having a discussion with his mother. He's most likely preoccupied with the news that he has been hit with, that he's the father of her sister Poppy's daughter, Luna. Lee sees that he's troubled and tells him, "It's okay, son. I know." This information thrown him for a loop. You know, he almost sputters while sitting behind his desk. "You and my sister," she says, trailing off as Finn looks at her, expecting the worst. Seeking comfort, over the Forrester mansion, Ridge and Taylor stand strong as a couple. They are to take care of their daughter, who is obviously reeling. Steffi tells her folks, "Finn and I have been through way more than any couple should. I don't think this feeling is ever going to go away," she admits. Does this mean that Finn took the opportunity of their anniversary to let him know that the young woman who tried to kill her, Luna, is actually his daughter? Let us know what you think in the comments section. In our next story today, the latest, Eric Braeden talks life after losing his house to the wildfires, The Young and Restless Milestone, by Mara Levinsky. In a new interview published on the eve of Eric Braeden's 45th anniversary on Young and Restless as Victor Newman, the daytime Emmy-winning star first appeared in the role on February the 8th, 1980. The actor opened up to TV Insider about his amazing run in Genoa City and his recent personal tragedy, the loss of his Pacific Palisades home to the devastating California wildfires. From the ashes, The actor acknowledged how challenging it has been to find himself suddenly homeless and bereft of a lifetime of possessions. Emotionally, you go through ups and downs, he noted, but you're never really fully prepared for the unforeseen events in life. Braden and his wife, Dale Gudesk, are still debating what the future holds for them. So far, we intend to rebuild, he said, but the caveat is that it's still unclear whether insurance companies will insure residents in his community, and the lifetime is also up in the air, as rebuilding can only happen after a thorough cleaning up of the soil. In light of the heaviness in his life away from work, Braden proclaimed that he was grateful for the mental break his work on The Young and Reckless provides. He explained, "You need to focus, otherwise you can't do the scenes, so it gives you a little relief from the constant concerns and worries." So many years into his Young and Restless career, Braden, who first contract was with the show, was for a meager 3 months, and the actor originally had no intentions of staying any longer. Shared that he still finds much to be inspired by when it comes to portraying Victor, "I love playing the character," he asserted. "He is self-made. He is suspicious. He's tough. He's hard, but he's also vulnerable, and he wants family more than anything because he didn't have it growing up." The actor cited the satisfaction he felt during a recent scene with Christian J. LeBlanc, who plays Michael, as an example of why playing Victor still excites him after 45 years. "I cannot often predict what I'll do in a scene, but when you really listen and suddenly something comes to you, boom. It's those moments I cherish," Braden smiled. Braden also feels a reverence for the special place both the show and the powerful character he plays has in the hearts and minds of his young and restless audience. "We entertain millions of people all over the world, and that gives you a certain feeling of responsibility to do it as well as you can," he mused, "and it gives you some joy as well." And fortunately, for daytime fans worldwide, Braden made it clear that he still has no plans to retire, declaring, "I'm a stubborn son of a bitch. I'm still here." In our next story today, a flashback, The Strange History of Aramid on Days of Our Lives, by Janet DeLauro. Desperate to give her parents, Kristen and Brady, back together, Rachel recently ran away from home on Days of Our Lives and ended up in Aramid, Demira spelled backwards. The youngster was befriended by a woman in white inside the Blake family home where Kristen and her brother, Peter, had been raised. The woman secretly helped Rachel apprehend Ava, Brandy's new girlfriend, and reunite with her parents. Traveling down memory lane, Aramid, a town not too far from Salem, was first introduced in 1995 when Peter planned to marry Jennifer there, and upon arriving at his family home, a mysterious and unstable woman in white watched Peter and Jennifer's every move. Believing Peter was her late husband, she made multiple attempts to kill Jennifer. Fortunately, Peter and Jennifer's ex, Jack, saved her. Eventually, the woman in white saw the error of her ways and made amends with Jennifer. John and Christian eventually arrived in Arima to attend Peter and Jennifer's wedding. John recalled that he had been in the house before. A jealous Tony, who had learned he was dying, plotted to kill himself during the ceremony and framed John for his murder. The diabolical scheme worked like a charm, and John was arrested and sentenced to death. However, the woman in white swiped Tony's journal, which detailed his twisted plot. After Stefano confiscated the journal, the woman in white revealed herself to Marlena and warned her that the diary was in Stefano's possession. Marlena managed to retrieve it, and with Jack's help, it was delivered to the authorities in time to save John from the gas chamber. Kristen eventually convinced the woman in white to come back to Salem, while Marlena hypnotized John, who recalled the woman's identity. She was Rachel Blake, a woman he'd known when he was a priest, and she was the mother of Kristen and Peter. John explained that Stefano had been pursuing Rachel and planted a bomb in her husband's car. Her husband died in the ensuing explosion, and Rachel, who was also in the vehicle when it blew up, ended up severely scarred. Knowing that John was aware of his heinous crime, Stefano kidnapped and brainwashed him. Eventually, Rachel confirmed that John's claims were true and reunited with Kristen and Peter. The mystery surrounding Aramid also involved Celeste, who fought to keep Lexi from discovering the truth about her parentage. Lexi had been born at an Aramid orphanage, and Celeste went so far as to try to destroy Lexi's birth certificate and threaten the lawyer not to divulge any information about Lexi's real mother and father. Upon arriving in Aramid, Lexi discovered she was adopted and embarked on a search to uncover her parents' identity. The parent man gave Lexi clues and eventually revealed that Celeste, who she long believed was her Aunt Frankie, was actually her birth mother, and that Stefano was her father. It turned out Celeste had given Lexi to her sister and husband to raise to keep her safe from the DeMira family. Opposite all of this, Shady St. Jude Claire, who was on Peter's payroll, was nursing an unhealthy obsession with Hope, and early in 1996, he took her hostage in the mountains of Aramid, leading Bo and their son Sean to grieve, believing she had died in an avalanche. But Bo believed in his heart that Hope was still alive, and eventually managed to come to her rescue. But before Jude could implicate Peter by revealing their unsavory connection, Peter shot him dead. In our next story today, an interview exclusive, Judy Evans' feared Days of Our Lives was killing her off, again, by Janet DeLauro. Bonnie's fall down an elevator shaft on Days of Our Lives came as a surprise story twist for actress Judy Evans, who plays the character, and when she first read it in the script, Evans admits she feared she was being killed off the soap. Deja vu, take two. I was concerned because it was right before a break in the production schedule, recounts Evans. I was like, oh, they're killing me off. It's a day's fate the actresses had experienced once before when the demise of her other Salem alter ego, Adrian Johnson Kriakis, was scripted as part of the show's 2019-2020 time jump storyline. Understandably, Evans had an emotional reaction to what she believed was evidence that she would be leaving the show, but she didn't seek clarification from the show's higher-ups. The actress explains, I learned never to ask what's happening, because the one time I did, they were killing my character off. So I was like, oh my God, I was panicked. I cried a little bit. I was so worried. I was freaking out because you never know, and I was too terrified to ask. It took a while to get to that next script to find out I didn't die. Upon returning to the set to film the fallout of the story, no pun intended, Evans was prepared for an intense makeup job that would reflect the cuts, bruises, and swelling Bonnie would have endured as a result of her accident. Natalie Thimm does my makeup on the show, and it was incredible, raves Evans. She did an amazing job. She did it in about 20 minutes. It was like watching a speed painter, and she had to match it for a few days as the story played out. Thimm's handiwork brought an extra level of realism to Evans' portrayal of the severely injured Bonnie. It helped so much, says the actress, noting that looking at her battered face in the mirror made her feel Bonnie's pain. It was interesting because I also kept trying to use what happened after I got into my own accident back in May of 2020. I fell off a horse. It was pretty bad. I broke my collarbone and 7 ribs, chipped a couple of vertebrae, and had a truncated lung. I had different injuries, but it was like, all you want is, please, somebody give me some drugs. Evans says she remembers begging, please do something. But the EMTs couldn't give me painkillers in the ambulance ride, and they were going so slow. It was like, do something. And they said, we can't until we get to the hospital. So I went back to that place where you're in pain and your blood is on fire and you can't think straight at the moment. I mean, my accident was probably not as painful as going down an elevator shaft face first. But yeah, that hurt a little bit. Evans shares that her on-screen family members, namely her TV husband, Wally Kurth, who plays Justin, and stepson Robert Scott, who plays Alex, were taken aback by her gruesome makeup job the first time they came face-to-face with her. I had to go out to the set early because they had to put me all in splints and the bandages on, explains Evan. The prop department had to hook me up with all that other stuff. So when Wally and Rob walked in, Wally was like, Jesus, what happened? It was pretty funny. The actress actually drove home with her bruises still on after the work one day. I was speeding, hoping to get pulled over, says Evan with a laugh. I had a good one for the cop. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I was going to say something like, oh, my face hurts. I'd look out the window and see other drivers look back at me and be like, oh, it was funny. Nothing, however, beat the reaction Evans got from her husband, Michael Luciano. I came home from work and I kind of surprised him, grins Evans. I was like, I had an accident on the way home. He said, what the? Then he was like, wait, you worked today, didn't you? I said, yeah, but he thought I was real for 5 seconds because the bruises looked so good. He laughed, and after he did stomp away for a second, we played pranks on each other a lot. So I got him back from a bunch of stuff he had already done to me. Meanwhile, fans can expect a miraculously speedy recovery from Bonnie, though Evans will continue to sport bruises on the air for a few more episodes. Bonnie eats and drinks a lot of dairy, and that's all I've got to say, winks Evans, on how Bonnie managed to avoid a slew of broken bones in such a terrible fall. She heals very fast. She's kind of a magical character, or it's something in the Salem water. In our next story today, the latest General Hospital's new Jack Brennan, Chris McKenna, speak out about surprise recasts by Janet DeLauro. Daytime veteran Chris McKenna has taken over the role of WSB honcho Jack Brennan on General Hospital, a surprise move precipitated by actor Charles Mature's decision to exit the soap. The sudden recast was put into motion fast and furiously when McKenna received word that the soap's executive producer, Frank Valenti, wanted him to do a chemistry test opposite GH star Laura Wright, who plays Carly. McKenna had worked with the EP decades earlier when he was playing Joey Buchanan on One Life to Live from 1990 to 1993. During McKenna's time on OLTL, Valentini was the show's stage manager, then an associate producer. Ready for action, in an interview with TV Insider, McKenna shared that he was quick to answer Valenti's call to duty. And 2 days later, he arrived at the studio ready to audition. Laura saw me in the hallway and ran over. We hugged and she said hello and we caught up really quick. And she wished me luck, the actor recalled. The pair had first become acquainted during McKenna's One Life to Live days back when Wright was playing Allie Rescott on Loving. Initially, McKenna had no clue about the identity of the role in General Hospital had in mind for him. They wrote a scene for the audition that was in spirit of Brennan, but they didn't use the name, explained McKenna. So it was a unique scene just to get the feel of the character and to see how the chemistry was between Laura and me. And it was great. Valenti, who had last been on the soap set with McKenna when the actor was a teenager, and after he and Wright finished their scene, McKenna divulged, Frank said, you were not this good when you were 12, and I said, no what? Once the role was his, McKenna received warm congratulations from his former One Life to Live mother, Erica Slezak, ex-Vicky, who had heard the big news from Valentini. I feel like we reconnected again because of that. So that was really cool, McKenna said, describing Slezak as my second mom. McKenna hasn't appeared on a soap in nearly a decade. He played Dr. Hayden on The Bold and Beautiful in 2016 and a follow-up to his 2014-2015 run on The Young and Restless as Killer Carp Mark Harding, but wasn't fazed by the tasks of jumping into the fast-moving production at General Hospital. In advance of shooting his first episode, which contains some 40 pages of dialogue, Laura Vera sweetly wrote me a message and said, "Listen, don't be daunted by the amount of pages," McKenna recounted. "I'll work with you and Eden, and we'll work with you, and we'll really, really read this together, and it'll be great." The actor responded, he said, with a text that read, "Not daunted, looking forward to it. Bring it on." Since starting his new gig, McKenna has enjoyed diving into the psyche of the complex new alter ego. He noted, "I don't usually play the guy in the suit. I'm in a tank top in the jungle, that kind of CIA agent. So this is a fun little twist on it, the more Bondian guy, if you will." In our last story today, Rummy Park responds to backlash against The Bold and Beautiful's Poppy by Diane Bernstein. Now that The Bold and Beautiful has revealed that Finn is the father of Poppy's daughter, Luna, fans are having a big reaction to the messy development. After all, Poppy may not be related by blood to Finn, but he was raised by her sister and grew up viewing Poppy as his aunt. Poppy's portrayer, Romy Park, has been some feedback to the story and spoke up about how she has chosen to see her character's side of things. Poppy's perception is what to her Instagram stories that Park began her defense of her character after receiving the following questions from. In our last story today, the latest, Tanner Novelin weighs in on The Bold and Beautiful's definitely messy paternity reveal for Finn by Mara Levinsky. On the Monday, February the 3rd, Bold and Beautiful confirmed the news that Sin fans were bracing themselves for. Finn, Steffi's devoted husband and a doting dad to their son Hayes, is also the biological father of murderous Luna via his long-ago sexual encounter with Poppy, who just so happens to be his adopted mother's sister. Father knows best. In an interview with U.S. Weekly, Novelin acknowledged of the twist. "This is definitely messy," but he's on board with that, telling the outlet, "This was a shocking and exciting twist for sure." While Novelin was surprised to learn this new information about Finn's backstory, the tryst with Poppy took place years before his character was introduced on the show in 2020. "I understand Finn even more now, learning that this is in his past," noting that Finn had a pretty troubled childhood. Novelin argued that the sheer fact that Finn was intimate with his adoptive aunt suggested that there's a lot of trauma to unpack. It even solidifies more why he wanted to create a perfect family for himself. Meanwhile, Finn and Lara's relationship will likely undergo its own bumpy transition as Finn reels from the realization that the young lady he regarded his whole life as a cousin is in fact someone he shares a much closer, familiar connection to, at least in the biological sense. Summed up, Novin, "He's prone to giving people second chances, but then he tried to kill his wife. He hasn't forgotten that Luna has issues, so it's going to be interesting to see how he's navigating that." Thank you for joining me today for Soap Opera Digest. I'm Pete Peake for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.